back. It is the World Soccer Talk crew. You can find us on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod, and also subscribe to us via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And you want to subscribe and tune in today because this is the show that brought back the magic to the FA Cup. That's right. It's not about the football. It's about these three great guys, Kartik Karachanya, Nicky Hollander, and Robin Bird. And we have to devote this show to the FA Cup. People talk about the romance, the magic. They wax on lyrically about how it used to be. And to be honest, for the last 10, 15 years, the FA Cup has been somewhat of a disappointment, with the occasional upset to make us think back to the old days of black and white and bumpy, muddy pitches. But this weekend really has shaken the world to its very foundations. Yes, that may be a slight exaggeration, but let's get straight into it. Chelsea versus Bradford City. Some are calling it the biggest upset in the history of the FA Cup. I'm going to debunk those myths now and say it was the second biggest upset. The biggest upset ever was Leeds United losing to Sunderland in the 1973 final. Yes, that was before many of you were born. But let me tell you about the Leeds United team that day. 11 stacked with world-class international players. And they were the defending champions. But let's not take anything away from Bradford City, who pulled off the most remarkable of performances at Stamford Bridge, 2-0 down before roaring back, and that's the only way to describe it. It really was roaring back through goals from Stead, Marias, Halliday, and Yates to steal, well, not even steal, just to take the most remarkable of victories, and the scenes in the dressing room afterwards, simply epic. Let's go to you first, Nicky Hollander, who's played in the FA Cup. What on earth was going on with Bradford City? Where did they get this belief that they could come from 2-0 down at Stamford Bridge to beat the European champions, the league champions? I mean, Chelsea have won everything and their side was just stacked with world-class players.
Well, I'm actually not sure where. I mean, if they had won like 2-0, or, you know, the game had been close and then they had kind of, you know, pulled it out and just, you know, all hands to the pump, I would have been like, I know how they did it. They kind of got belief because the game was close. But they were 2-0 down. You know, it really, you know, playing away at Stamford Bridge. And I've never seen, to me, that is the biggest upset of all time. Because, like you say, Leeds against Sunderland, here's the deal. You know, the gap between the haves and the have-nots was not so big then as it is now. If you look at the money that was on the field for Chelsea compared to what was on for Bradford, if you look at the gulf in quality, it was ridiculous. So somehow they managed to pull it together for that one day, and it was quite possibly, in my view, maybe the biggest upset of all time in soccer, because that was just that. I mean, basically, take away the first two goals, they won 4-0 at Stamford Bridge. That is unheard of. And, you know, it brought back the romance of the cup, because that's just, you know, you probably could have got 1,000,000 to 1 on them scoring 4 goals in a row against Chelsea.
It was, in fact, Nicky,
to Bradford.
28 to 1 were the odds before the game started. Bertie boy, Phil Parkinson refuses to shake Jose Mourinho's hand with 3 minutes left, and I don't blame him. He said there's so much quality on the pitch. Had they snuck one, they would have certainly stormed up to get another equaliser. But what do you make of this Jose Mourinho handshaking nonsense? Because, you know, I was thinking about it this morning and wondering about a certain Hitzfeld when Bayern Munich were leading Man United into injury time in the 99 European Cup. Wouldn't it have been funny if he'd shaken Sir Alex Ferguson's hand then?
Yeah, no, it's funny. You know, Phil Parkinson's, you know, he did the right thing by not shaking his hand, because there was still a few minutes left. And, no, it smacks of being very patronising towards, you know, let's say the smaller, the lesser teams. But, I mean, that was a remarkable comeback by Bradford. And to be in that position where, you know, Mourinho is shaking your hand and saying, well done. But also, it's those mind games, isn't it? If Chelsea had got one back, then it would have been all hands to the pump near the end. But credit to Bradford, but credit goes to all of those, you know, those lower teams in the lower divisions this weekend. It was unbelievable. And the fact that Bradford took 6,000 fans to Stamford Bridge, it just goes to show that, you know, the FA Cup is in vogue again.
6,000 fans and your dog by the sound of things.
Okay, all right.
Kartik, okay. Let's have a look at this Chelsea lineup. Cech, Cahill, Azpilicueta, Zuma, Christensen, Obi Mikel, Ramirez, Oscar, Salah, Drogba, Remy. On comes Fabregas, Willian, Hazard. They lose to Bradford.
Unbelievable. And Nick, when you opened the show, I thought, yeah, I didn't even think about this upset ranking up there with Leeds losing that 73 final. Don Revie's great teams at the apex of their power losing to Sunderland, the last trophy won by any club from the Northeast. But this upset is there. I agree with Nicky. It's right there, if not bigger. You think about Bradford City, all the trouble they've had the last few seasons, the relegations, the financial trouble, just the malaise of football in general in Yorkshire. Leeds United has had a hard time. Huddersfield's been struggling of late. Barnsley just got relegated a few seasons ago back down to League One. This is a great victory, not just for Bradford City, but for that entire region, to go to Stamford Bridge and do this. And as you say, Nick, when you read those names in the Chelsea team sheet, this wasn't exactly a youth team, a team of academy products that Jose Mourinho were giving a run out to. These were important squad players who are going to play a critical role if Chelsea's going to win silverware this season in Europe or in the Premier League. So just amazing. What a result.
Bradford City, unfortunately, probably known to some of our American listeners for the tragic fire that engulfed Valley Parade back in the 80s with the loss of so many lives. So this really a brilliant day for the club. And please, if you get a chance, go to YouTube, type in Bradford City celebrations, dressing room, Chelsea. It really is remarkable to watch professional players acting like 16-year-old school kids, because that's exactly what it was. This was the FA Cup at its finest, and Nicky and Robin will attest to the fact that back in the day when we were young kids, FA Cup day, we would be glued to the TVs. As soon as the final whistle blew, we would be out in the back garden replicating what we just saw, and the scenes in the dressing room were exactly like that. All the Bradford City players reverted to being young kids again, and for the joy of the game. And I think and I hope that Bradford City get a favourable draw in the next round. Manchester United, and can replicate the facts. And let's go to Manchester United, because I think this is where this weekend of shocks began. They went to Cambridge City, and once again, Louis van Gaal, he wasn't messing around. Let's go through this squad. De Gea, Rojo, Jones, Carrick, Valencia, Fellaini, Di Maria, Blind, Januzaj, Falcao, Wilson, on came RVP, Van Persie, Herrera, and Shaw, and they were held by Cambridge United. And let's give Cambridge United all the credit in the world. Money, the coach, really put together a team that was built to defend. It was almost the Christmas tree for formation. And they held the cream of United to a 0-0 draw. They will go back to Old Trafford and produce a money-spinning replay, something to the tune of £1.5 million. Pounds Cambridge United will earn for this. And this is a club that, much like Bradford City, has been through the ringer, dropped out of the Football League, are working their way back in again. And to hold Manchester United, really a remarkable feat, Robin Burt. How did they do it?
I really don't know, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's a very small pitch. But, you know, the point you were making about them playing non-league football, I mean, they were playing non-league football for the last 9 years. And you were talking about the value of the two teams. I mean, the starting lineup for Cambridge is virtually zero as far as the buys are concerned, compared to Man United at 180 million. The way I think they did this is they've got nothing to lose. It's the same thing with the Bristol City West Ham game today. When teams don't have anything to lose, they roll their sleeves up, they keep it very compact, they start to identify the players that are going to hurt them and hit them on the break. And, you know, the crowd, it's a small crowd. It's a very intimate ground. It's only about 7,000 people, which is probably the population of Cambridge anyway. But, you know, United had 75% of the possession. So what that means is that Cambridge are getting every man behind the ball. And you made the point that, yeah, they're going to go to Old Trafford. They're going to take maybe 5,000 to 7,000 fans, you know, whatever their allocation is. Now, they're not going to win at Old Trafford, but they're going to have a good day out. And you've seen teams like Woking do exactly the same thing, go up to Old Trafford and, you know, even sneak a draw there. But Cambridge, they had nothing to lose. And that's the point of the FA Cup. That's why it's one of the most unique tournaments in the world, that you can have teams playing in four separate divisions and have the bottom division compete just as well with some of the Premier League teams. And today, or rather this weekend, there were 10 Premier League teams that got knocked out this weekend.
Nicky Hollander, let me put it to you. Talk to me about skill versus hard work, because that's a phrase we hear a lot in England. Hard work, the lads work their socks off. They really put in a good shift, okay? And we hear that phraseology more often than, oh, good, skillful team. Why does hard work sometimes trump skill? Because in any other sport, surely skill would come on top.
Well, I think soccer has changed now. I think that in the old days, skill was much more devastating because teams were not, like, the science of soccer was not so kind of advanced. And so teams weren't set up with athletes to play, like, you know, 4-5-1. They didn't have that kind of mentality where they, you know, even the lower league team, they get to watch these, you know, these big teams on TV, and they can devise a plan of how to stop them. And, you know, they have better training methods. So now individual skill just to, you know, do something brilliant can be negated a lot more than it could be in the old days, where they played wide open, you know, by the 70th minute. There was nobody in midfield. There was just a big gap between defense and attack. You know, if you remember the 1982 World Cup, you know, where it was like people had their socks rolled down and were jogging around. That's when skill would destroy teams. But you don't have that anymore. Everybody's fit. Everybody's in shape. And they know how to kind of compact the field and make it much harder for the skill players. So that's where the gap is kind of narrowed. I mean, I spent, like, you know, 9 months at Cambridge, and I played on that field. It's a slopey pit field. It's a tiny town. It's a beautiful old stadium. And, I mean, they did phenomenal. I mean, if it wasn't for Bradford, you know, we'd be talking about that result, you know, almost as just an enormous, you know, upset. But like I say, I want to go back to it. Bradford winning 4-2 at Stamford Bridge. Not at Wembley, at the home of Chelsea, and scoring four in a row, nothing is more shocking than that.
The first time Jose Mourinho has ever conceded, Mourinho managed team has ever conceded four goals at home. Staying with the Manchester theme, Kartik, your money grubbing bastards went to the Middle East, played I'm not sure what kind of game it was, but it was a money-grubbing game. Flew back into Manchester at 7 p.m. on Friday night, then get turned over by Middlesbrough on Saturday. Oh, boy, how I'm smiling and how they deserved it. What on earth do you have to say about your club that chases the filthy lucre at the expense of winning perhaps the only trophy they'll win this year?
I completely agree with you. I've already sounded off on this on the city message boards about this cash grab, this midweek cash grab in between two important Premier League fixtures, Arsenal and Chelsea, and then this FA Cup fixture against Borough, who are, after all, right now the top team in the Northeast, considering the way Sunderland and Newcastle are performing in the Premier League. So this was just inviting the result, and City looked very flat. Credit to Middlesbrough, though. They played very, very well. They've been playing well in the championship. They've looked good. I've seen a couple of their championship matches over the Christmas period. They look like a team that may be poised to finally come back up into the top flight. We know they're a club that produces a lot of players, more players out of their academy generally than most big clubs around the country. So great result for them. As far as Manchester City is concerned, this is another poor result and another poor performance, more importantly than the poor result. You've seen four or five matches in a row where Manchester City have just looked sluggish for large portions of the match, and really little creativity in the final third, inability to break down sides that are bunkered. I think Pellegrini is running out of ideas as far as tactical changes in match, and credit to Borough. It's great to see them push on and see what they can do from here.
Bertie, I'm not going to ignore you, but I'm going to quickly go to Nicky. Nicky, talk to me about travel, okay? Because I know you work with Solomon Kalou, you work with different players. How much does a four-hour plane ride take out of a professional footballer when they have to go and play the next day? Is there something in the legs? Is there something to do with the oxygen in the plane that can have a debilitating effect the following day?
Yeah, not so much oxygen in the plane, but definitely sleep deprivation, not being in the right kind of, you know, circadian rhythm can absolutely affect you. You know, just try, you know, not sleeping and then going out for a sprint, you'll be all over the place because your body needs that rest. It needs that shut off to kind of just reset the kind of, you know, reset your body and kind of get that. It's complicated, but there's different kind of processes in which, you know, when you are doing explosive sports, you kind of use a ATP transference, which is just like your muscles breaking off cells to create energy. And if you're not rested, you don't have that full power. It's a big difference. And, you know, some of the reasons why these top teams are better than the lower division teams are because they have faster, stronger, not just more technical, but faster and stronger players. And if you start to equalize that, then you have a close game right there.
Bertie, Borough aren't mugs, second in the championship. Any chance that City may have been a tad complacent?
Yeah, no, I think this smacks of arrogance, you know. And so what Nicky's talking about sort of amazes me. It makes logical sense what he's saying. But why isn't there anybody in the Manchester City, you know, sort of medical department advising on these types of things? It's a very basic thing. Flying the night before, even though they're probably sleeping in first class, it is probably broken sleep. But I think they took Borough for granted here. And I don't really understand that. And I think Karanka has done a phenomenal job at Borough all season. They've been working their way up the table. They're in second place, probably going to get promoted next season. You know, but watching that game in the beginning, the first 20 minutes, it was all Man City. After that, you know, Borough could have had three or four goals, and that's not a joke. I mean, Lee Tomlin hit the post, but, you know, once that first goal went in, you thought, okay, this is possible. But being, you know, at the Etihad, I really thought Manchester City were going to get back into that game. So I'm really surprised that they didn't. But, I mean, credit to Borough's keeper. He had to make a number of phenomenal saves just to keep him in the game. So, but I think it's fair. I think Middlesbrough took the FA Cup seriously, and I don't think Man City did.
We mentioned a weekend to forget for Premier League teams. Incredibly, at Ewood Park, only 5,928 showed up as Blackburn Rovers took care of the gaffers, Swansea City. Swansea opened the scoring with Sigurdsson, but Taylor, Justaid and Conway doing the job for Blackburn Rovers. They will move through to the next round. In one of the thrillers of the day at St Mary's, Southampton and Crystal Palace. And once again, the Alan Pardew effect. This is just, it's getting a bit ridiculous right now. I mean, the man who would eat himself if he was a bar of chocolate is in fact definitely some dairy milk. And I might even have a lick or two. 31,320 showed up at St Mary's, definitely taking the FA Cup very seriously for the 1976 winners. That's right, 1976, they beat Manchester United. Come on, you Saints. They took the lead through Pella. Shamak made it 1-1. An own goal by Dan, 2-1 Saints. And then Sanogo obviously making a big impact already. And Shamak with the winner. So Arsenal doing very well at Southampton for a change. Palace winning. Kartik Karachanya, Alan Pardew, he's gone to Selhurst Park, and the team can't stop winning.
Yeah, not only can they not stop winning, he rotated the squad in this match. He didn't throw out the same 11 that he had thrown out in those first two matches, which he won in the Premier League. This was a very much a changed squad. We saw Shamak back in the team and scoring goals for fun. Sanogo coming from Arsenal on loan and scoring immediately. And a comprehensive performance. They kept the ball well. This wasn't what you would characterize as the type of performance you would have seen out of a Tony Pulis Palace team or a Tony Pulis Stoke team. Kept the ball well. They were going forward. They don't have Bolasie right now because of the Cup of African Nations, but their wide play was still good. Palace, maybe I was wrong last week when I said they're going to play well, but they're not going to have a Pulis-like second half of the season. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Pardew's going to get them into the top half of the table.
Nicky, what do you make of this Arsenal connection with Palace? Shamak, Campbell, Sanogo. I mean, Why is there just this one-way trip from the Emirates to Selhurst Park?
Well, I think, you know, that sometimes happens. If you look at, you know, Spurs send a ton of players to Swansea. Spurs send a ton of players to QPR because they've got connections with an old manager. It can happen, you know. They're both London teams, so obviously Crystal Palace don't have as much money as Arsenal. So players that are not quite either fitting in or they're not settling well, but they still got quality, it's a quite logical place to take them. And like I said to you a few weeks ago, Alan Pardew is a really good manager. And Newcastle should be careful for what they wish for, because he can always, every single year, twice a year, has made each Newcastle team with not that much talent into real, like, a unified team that can really do something. And, I mean, Ashley was selling players from under his nose in the summer and in the winter transfer window, and he would continue to keep on getting Newcastle to play great. So it's absolutely no surprise they're doing well. And that, my friend, is why those Newcastle fans who felt that their club was too good for Alan Pardew are now rethinking that.
Palace, a team that probably no one wants to face. Let's stay in London, Bertie. White Hart Lane. 35,548 down at the lane to watch Tottenham Hotspur, favourites for the FA Cup, implode against Leicester City. We'll get to Nicky Hollander in a minute. I know he's got something to say. Obviously, Vorm with one of the shockers of the season. But how on earth did Leicester City go to White Hart Lane and get this victory? Tottenham Hotspur have been flying as of late. And you know Pochettino would have looked at the cup. You know Pochettino understands Tottenham's relationship with the FA Cup. I mean, they do love one another. And to lose at home to Leicester City, bottom of the Premiership, who surely have no designs on winning the FA Cup, has got to rank as one of the biggest upsets of the weekend.
Yeah, you know, the thing about this game is that those two goals that Leicester scored came in the last 7 minutes. Spurs, and Nicky may attest to this, they dominated that game. You know, they had over 65% possession. But again, it doesn't matter. Sometimes we've seen these teams dominate other teams with possession. But the important thing is putting the ball in the back of the net. I mean, obviously, Spurs started well with the penalty, but they took their foot off the pedal. I mean, they completely capitulated in the last 7 minutes. And we've seen so many games be won in the last 10, 15 minutes. And that was that crucial period right there. It was a fairly even affair. So, I mean, so when I turned on, you know, my computer on Saturday and I saw the last 10 minutes of that, I couldn't actually believe what was happening. It's just, I mean, and that's typical of the FA Cup and the drama and, you know, players wanting to make a name for themselves. And Ayua and Schlupp were two very important players for Leicester on the day. So, you know, credit to Leicester. I mean, they've been playing quite well of late and they're getting a little bit of momentum there. So, hey, fantastic result.
Nicky, any chance that the confidence of the mighty Spurs has been dinged ahead of their League Cup semi-final second leg against Sheffield United?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but what I'm really happy, I'm very rarely am I happy when Spurs lose, but I was very happy that Spurs lost. You know why? Because the crowd at White Hart Lane was shocking. Because when...
Oh, what a surprise, huh? The most entitled supporters in England. Where is Nate Abaraya when you need him?
Now, here's the thing. Spurs have like 10, 12,000 of the best fans in the world. The away fans are absolutely amazing. Like, they travel everywhere. They get behind the team. But on 70 minutes, Adebayor comes on and the crowd start booing. Spurs are 1-0 up and the crowd start booing because they think he's not good enough for Spurs. He doesn't try hard enough for Spurs. They have no idea what his kind of reasons are for being out in terms of like being given compassionate leave because of his brother. It's like they took it upon themselves to start booing him. And it completely changed the atmosphere in the ground. And Spurs went on a loss. And you know what? I think that's good because I've now figured out the reason Spurs lose isn't because of Levy, isn't because of Pochettino, it's because of the terrible fans at White Hart Lane who have this sense of entitlement that think Spurs are a big team when Spurs are a middle-of-the-road, you know, team with a great history and they think that players are not good enough to play for Spurs, and they were the reason Spurs lost. They completely changed the atmosphere in the ground. The players felt it, and you can put that one down on the White Hart Lane home faithful.
Well, Nicky Hollander about to enter the witness protection program anytime he goes to North London.
Now, I did say there was 12,000 good fans out there. The away supporters, the ones who get behind the team. You don't boo them.
Other results, Preston North End, Sheffield United. The last thing Sheffield United want was probably a tie. They went to Deepdale, 10,770 on hand. Callagher in the 19th minute for PNE. Girolamano with the equaliser, so they will do it again. Derby County 2-0 over Chesterfield. Derby County trying to, I'd say, reclaim some glory years under Steve McClaren. They have been going well in the Championship, but consistency a problem for them. Not sure if they want a good FA Cup run. Cardiff City losing to Reading 2-1. And Sunderland and Fulham, they will do it again, 0-0. The last thing Gus Poyet wanted was a big tie there. Kartik Karishnaya, let's go to you for our next game. A Midlands derby. Birmingham City and West Bromwich Albion, always a spiteful affair. Not quite the Birmingham City Villa, but still a great deal of tension involved. 28,438 showed up at St Andrews for this one. And West Bromwich Albion, once again, we're seeing this new manager effect, and it's Pardew and it's Poulos, kind of two managers almost, I don't want to say cut from the same cloth, but They have that intensity, and they have that ability to get the most out of teams with little resources. And Achebe with a brace, assisted by Berahino. Birmingham City did get one back through grounds, but not enough. West Bromwich Albion, talk to us about them.
Yeah, I was real excited about this fixture when it popped up in the fourth round draw. These clubs are about 3-4 miles apart. That's it in the West Midlands. I am not surprised that Nichibi is playing well. He's the type of Pulis player, type of target, but mobile target player we saw at Stoke. We saw him use Shamak a little bit that way last season, second half of the season at Palace. Not surprised they're getting results under Pulis. I fully expect them to steer clear of the drop zone now with that. For Brom, this was a nice fixture to play West Brom. To have the big crowd at home at St. Andrews, obviously, as I mentioned, the proximity of the two clubs. Brom are bouncing back. They've had all this financial trouble the last couple seasons. Somehow they've stayed in the Championship. Now they're beginning to stabilize. They've got a good manager. They have an opportunity to stabilize the club this season and then push back for promotion next season, get back up to the Premier League where they belong. So I think they'll be unhappy they lost this match, but I don't think they'll be that bothered to not have the extra fixtures.
I just want to say, Anichibi is one of my clients, so I take credit for both of those goals.
There you go. Well done, Nicky.
Well, Nicky, talk to us very quickly about Anichibi. Obviously, a player who's trying to find himself again, right, after his trials and tribulations at Everton.
Well, you know, Victor is a great player. He is, on his day, unplayable. He is massive. I mean, like, he is a linebacker playing soccer. He's got great feet, great control. You know, his movement is really good. The thing with Victor is because he's so big and because he tries movements that really big guys don't normally try, he ends up getting a lot of injuries. He's got a lot of groin stuff going on. And so it's difficult for him to get that run of games. But truly, I mean, Victor on his day is, you know, it's kind of like a mini Drogba. He's got a lot of the same attributes that make, you know, that made Drogba unplayable in his day, except, like I say, he's got that blistering speed, you know, off the mark. And he's just, you know, if you get the wrong side of him, you're not getting back. I mean, his legs are the size of, you know, a regular person's waist.
Perhaps the final shock of the weekend was at Anfield, 43,847 bothered to show up for this one, and it was a little bit of a snoozer as Emil Heskey returned to Anfield, joined by Ida Gudjonsson. My God, that must be the oldest strike force in world football. Bertie, it seemed to me that Liverpool had found their way. Is this a stubbed toe of sorts?
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you? Coming up against Bolton, a team that's sort of mid-table, I believe, in the Championship
16th
right now.
16th right now.
All right, yeah, exactly. Liverpool, you know, Liverpool, like most games, they had a huge amount of possession. And so it's not through a lack of, you know, retaining the ball and moving the ball around. I thought Sterling had a good game. And, you know, but the goalie for Bolton, Bogdan, I think he's Hungarian. He made some phenomenal saves from Sterling and Barini and Coutinho. So if it wasn't for some of those, you know, phenomenal saves, I think Bolton would be struggling. But it's funny you talk about, you know, Gudjonsson and Heskey. That's a combined age of 73. So the fact that, you know, that Bolton were even in this game, I think, is a real testament to what Lennon is doing at Bolton. He's making them much more compact. He's making them much more competitive. So taking that back to the Reebok, I think Bolton stand a really good chance of causing some trouble there. But granted, during the game, Liverpool had two penalty shouts that I really do believe were penalties. And Kevin Friend obviously didn't agree with those decisions. So it was, I think Bolton got a little lucky. And I would say that, you know, Liverpool are probably needing to get their master strikesman back.
Brendan Rodgers, is he under pressure, Kartik, if they do go back to the Reebok and lose? I mean, how important is silverware? We're seeing Liverpool in the semi-finals of the League Cup. They take on Chelsea. It's 1-1, so obviously Chelsea look like they're in the box seats there. The Premier League is nothing but a dream. They're out of Europe. The FA Cup really is a lifeline for Brendan Rodgers. He played a team that certainly looked like on paper they should take care of Bolton Wanderers, but they didn't take care of Bolton Wanderers. Is it a case of him maybe setting the team up a little conservative not to get beaten, or is it just still a case of Liverpool not firing on all cylinders?
A little bit of both. They've got that League Cup second leg coming up against Chelsea, and that's an opportunity for them to win silverware. Let's not forget that. If they can go to the Bridge, get a result, they're 1-1 going back. They played very well in the first leg after about the 25-minute mark. Chelsea playing Mourinho style away from home, bunkered, and I thought Liverpool had some great play in that match. One thing I want to point out before we get back to Rodgers, we talked about Spurs fans a few moments ago. Nicky, I completely concur with your comments, and this shows the difference between Liverpool supporters and Spurs supporters. Emil Heskey was a very good player for Spurs, even though he's been mocked by the media. For Liverpool, even though he's been mocked by the media in England for not being able to score enough goals, what have you, with the national team. He comes back to Anfield, gets a great reception. I'm not sure Spurs fans necessarily give that to a guy like Heskey. Again, shows the understanding of the club culture and football that Liverpool supporters have. But Rodgers is under pressure, Nick, but I don't think he has to win a piece of silverware this season. I think if he were to win the FA Cup, it would certainly help. However, if he doesn't win an FA Cup or a League Cup trophy this year and does not finish in the top four next season, he enters the season maybe top of the sack race.
Oh, very brutal.
Don't be so... I'm telling you right now, if Liverpool fire Brendan Rodgers, it's going to be way worse than Alan Pardew leaving Newcastle. Brendan Rodgers is the best thing to happen to Liverpool since Kenny Dalglish, mate.
Is that Kenny Dalglish the player, I hope?
Yeah,
not the manager.
The player manager.
The player manager. Today we had three ties. Robin Burt's West Ham United taking on Bristol City. Before we get comments from the boys, though, Bertie had a chance to catch up with Phil Whelans, a big diehard West Ham United fan who runs a very successful podcast, the name of which eludes me. Robin, inform me.
Stop Hammer Time.
Our very own Bertie Boy had a chance to catch up with Phil this week. You gotta love the Sam Allardyce impersonation. Here's what Phil Whelans had to say.
Phil, welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. It's an absolute pleasure having you on the pod today.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So, as a West Ham fan, I've been listening to your pod for a number of years.
Oh, thanks a lot. I think we've been doing it must be about 7 years now.
Is that right?
Started doing Kirbishley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So for listeners not familiar with the Stop Hammer Time podcast, it's a pod run by the fans, is that right?
It was when I signed with my my agent before last. No, in fact, my agent before the one before last. He did one about Spurs with Phil Cornwall, who was one of his clients at the time, who was a comedian. And so he said, that one was about Spurs. So he said, why don't you do one about West Ham? And because they'd sort of set up the kind of, you know, just the infrastructure is too grand a word, but sort of, you know, the way to make one, we just jumped in and started ours. And,
right.
But we have lots of, journalists and guests. We've had ex-players on. Ray Winston's done it. We have a lot of comedians who like West Ham. So, you know, we obviously have guests who are big fans, but people from inside the club as well, you know.
And so this is all done by Playback Media, who do other fan teams as well.
Yeah, that's right. The Spurs one, I think, was just, you know, something they did for fun, and then they added ours, and then Alan Davis did an Arsenal one, and I think it's just sort of grown from there. I'm not even sure they were called Playback Media at the time they started.
Right.
Now, yeah, they've got a little stable going, yeah.
Well, so tell me about West Ham this season. I mean, this seems to be a team that is totally transformed. At times, I don't even recognise the way they're playing. So what do you put that down to?
Well, I mean, the new players. There was a bit of luck at the beginning of the season. I mean, luck's the, you know, it's sort of the wrong word, but chance in the Nolan's injury very much changed the midfield. We went to the away game at Palace in which Nolan we expected to be playing, but he wasn't. He'd hurt his shoulder. And suddenly the whole shape of the midfield was different with Zarate at the tip of that diamond. And then subsequent games, Downing was moved to the tip of that diamond. And suddenly it was just transformed. This is even before Song came in, you know. Kayati sort of went straight into the team. And the fullbacks made a huge difference as well. So that now with Valencia, Creswell and Jenkinson in the team, there's genuine pace, which we hadn't had for 3 or 4 years. And that makes a huge difference, I think.
Yeah, but it seems interesting. You know, the season started well with the pace and the power of Valencia and Sacco getting his goals. And now, you know, with Carroll fit and Nolan back, it does seem to have shifted a little bit. And my concern is that we're going to go back to a little bit more of the long ball and relying on the big man more than we did at the beginning of the season.
That's right. I mean, I would agree with you. Sometimes when you say things like this, you get jumped on as a kind of Sam hater. I don't hate Sam at all, but I am concerned. When Carroll came back, the first thing we did was win a couple of games playing badly, which we hadn't done before. And some people say that's the sign of a good team, if you're playing badly but you still win. But we beat Newcastle 1-0 and we beat West Brom not playing terribly well. And then subsequent games, we've been playing a more kind of containing style of 4-5-1 football, which is a bit like we played last year and the previous year. And Carroll has been playing really well, but in some games he's playing well, but Sacco isn't playing as well, and nor is Downing, because Downing's getting missed out by balls over the top and by having to go out wide to put crosses in for Carroll. So it feels a bit, you know, there's a danger of sort of baby with the bathwater a bit, in a way, in order to accommodate Carroll, who is playing well, let me, you know, restate. We're changing a lot of things that were really working well.
Yeah, right, exactly. So just changing gears here a little, Phil. So you've been a season ticket holder for a number of years.
That's right, yeah, many years.
Yeah, and I know you get a lot of emails from the club, and I believe you, received one from Sam Allardyce after West Ham's amazing 9-8 penalty shootout win against Everton in the FA Cup.
Yeah, as a season ticket holder, you get a sort of an email that they've personalised with your name at the top of it, sort of after significant games, and usually on a Monday morning after weekend fixtures. And they're often from sort of figures in the club, the chair people. Sometimes they're from the team, and sometimes they're from Sam Allardyce, and this one was from Sam. I can read it to you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, please.
I'll try and give a bit of a feel for Sam's delivery of the email. I'll do my best. All right, here we go.
Dear Philip, anyone who accuses me of being too defensive-minded need only look at last week's thrilling FA Cup clash with Everton. The stats for that shootout speak for themselves. 50% possession and 9 goals, all from inside the area. Not those flamboyant showing-off shots from outside the box that bloke Zarate, the dead man I call him, used to try. To concede 9 goals in the final phase of a game is unforgivable, and the Everton defence should be ashamed of themselves. Anyone touting Roberto Martinez as a good manager must be deluded. I'm really good. And congratulations should go to Adrian for the almost Nolan-esque way he slotted that ball into the net. Although I had no doubts about him whatsoever, you only have to look at his height to see that he'll make a fantastic striker. Possession in football is overrated. It's the amount of time you haven't got the ball because it's in the other team's goal that matters. It may surprise you to learn that the total amount of time spent scoring the goals in that magnificent 3-0 win over Hull was a mere 11 seconds. Percentage-wise, in a 90-minute game with 4 added minutes, that's less than 0.19503%. I'm happy for the other team to have the ball 99.805% of the game if it means we score 3 goals. That's why I discourage shooting from outside the box. The extra time the ball spends travelling towards the goal is just dead time, completely wasted, time we could be scoring another goal. A towering header downwards into the net from a giant centre forward is aided by gravity, which increases the speed of the ball and means it gets to the goal quicker. But you try explaining Newton's second law of motion, i.e. the relationship between mass acceleration and applied force, to a modern footballer, and they'll look at you as if you're mad. I am the only football manager currently working who begins each team talk with a PowerPoint presentation and a chapter from Carl Sagan. That's why I'm the best, Philip, and you have to pay to come and watch me. We're approaching a huge moment in the club's history, the one-year anniversary of my February Manager of the Month award. It's getting embarrassing, I must say, just how much this topic comes up every time I write one of these emails. I don't want a huge fuss made. The idea of an open-top bus parade down Green Street, or a minute's applause at every Premier League ground across the country, or filling the Tower of London's moat with hundreds of thousands of packets of chewing gum, these are all brilliant ideas, and much better than the ideas Roberto Martinez would have. But the wife and I will probably just go for a quiet meal with Kevin Nolan, then home early, pop a Cialis, and have an early night. You are all deluded. Big Sam. And that's it. And I imagine that's gone to every season ticket holder.
Yeah, he's quite an articulate man, isn't he?
He is, yes. He's, as he keeps telling us, he's one of the most forward-thinking managers in the division.
Well, Phil, I've just got a few more minutes, with you. So I just wanted you to tell me a little bit about the Olympic Stadium and West Ham moving in there in 2016, the 2017 season. So how do you feel about that as a fan that's been watching West Ham at the Bowling Ground all these years?
Yeah, God knows. I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? I don't know anything about marketing, but one thing I'd assume is true that you sort of need to create a demand. And it feels to me that if we could have expanded the current stadium, which I think we could do, to 45,000 and get to the point where we're filling that and there's a demand there to move to a bigger stadium, the way there was at Highbury, because Highbury, there was like a sort of waiting list for season tickets for Arsenal or Highbury before they moved to the Emirates. Now there isn't, of course, because it's bloody massive. But, it sort of feels that, you want to create a demand before you make that leap. But there's another argument that says if you build it, they will come.
Right.
If you think big, you will be big. And yeah. I think that Jim was talking about this the other day. I can't remember if it was on the podcast or just in the pub. But he said, this redesigned badge that they're going to have has the word London prominently displayed on it. And I think for kind of foreign visitors, for business people, for people in the city, people who are going to occupy executive boxes, people that are possibly going to invest in the team, I think Sullivan and Gold are really going to sort of hammer the sort of 1966
World Cup, Moorhurst-Peters connection,
right.
Really hammer the whole Cockney thing, and really try and sort of position, as the salespeople say, position West Ham as the kind of as London's club, you know.
Yeah.
The transport links will take people to the stadium that the triumphant Olympic Games were in, and I feel that they are fans of the club, and they're also, you know, businessmen, and however they make their money, well, you know, that's a side issue. And I sort of hope they're gonna, you know, really sort of not drop the ball on this one. And
right.
I guess they can't afford to. But, and I also think it was probably just a gift that couldn't be ignored, you know, this
stadium
for such a kind of bargain knockdown price to get this stadium and get it altered to be a football stadium, sort of, you know, at minimal cost. It seems like they kind of, you know, they had to jump really at that opportunity.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, all ships will rise with the tide. I think it's an important move financially for the team also to start competing in the future and maybe one day European football. You know, you and I can dream about that. But anyway, Phil, so we're sort of out of time right now, unfortunately.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, nice talking to you, Robin, and we must have you on the podcast when you visit London.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. That sounds good. So maybe when you come back onto our pod, we can talk about, you know, when West Ham have qualified for the Champions League.
Yep, I'll talk to you in 2051.
All right, Phil. Cheers, mate.
All right, mate. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great stuff, Bertie. Talk to us about this Phil Whelan character. Love his Allardyce impersonations. How close is he to the West Ham United team, players, backroom staff?
Yeah, he's one of these guys that he obviously loves the club. He started the podcast 7-odd years ago, and he has this cadre of comedians and various other ex-players that come on the pod and they talk about West Ham. And the nice thing about what he does is they keep it very lighthearted. They spend a lot of time taking the piss out of the West Ham team, even when they're doing well. And they've certainly been taking the piss out of them for the last couple of years, the way they've been playing. But no, he has a nice sensibility about himself. He does a great impersonation. He does David Gold. He does David Sullivan. He's done Vaz Tay, who no longer is playing for West Ham. And he does Sam Allardyce, and he has a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely nailed it. West Ham United. I think, many people said this tie against Bristol City was a foregone conclusion, but Ashton Gate, always a tough place to play. Bristol City have been firing on all cylinders. They're second in League One. So West Ham go there, and Sacco gets a late winner. Deserved, Bertie? Or, I mean, I'm reading reports that actually Bristol City had West Ham on the rack for certain periods of this game.
Yes, they did. And I thought West Ham were quite poor. But I'm not going to take anything away from, from Bristol City. I thought they played exceptionally well. You know, they have a fella called Matt Smith, who's this monster who plays up top for them. And he was causing all sorts of trouble in the air and corners. So I think West Ham really did get out of jail there. Sometimes you're not always going to play beautiful football. The game changed for me when Sacco and Amalfitano came on, replacing Valencia. And fortunately, Carroll was in the right place to cross it over, and Sacco was at the back post, to put it away. But I really do give credit to Bristol City and to all those teams this weekend in the lower divisions. They've got nothing to lose. West Ham had everything to lose in a situation like that. Again, it's a small ground. It was very well attended by the Bristol City fans. There were only 570 allocated tickets for the West Ham fans. So it was one of those typical constant aerial bombardments, not just by West Ham, but by Bristol City. But really, West Ham were poor on the day.
Taking it back to the Midlands, Villa Park, 27,415 for the visit of Bournemouth. Kartik, how important was this victory for Aston Villa? Because they are scratching around for everything right now. However, the last thing Villa probably want is an FA Cup run. But the last thing they needed was to be turned over by AFC Bournemouth. You know, talk to us about the mentality of this team when you're in a position where you don't want extra games because you want to stay in the Premier League. But you know that to keep momentum going and keep belief going, you've got to win games.
Remember a year ago at this time, or a year ago, third round, when Paul Lambert came out and said, we're not really bothered with the FA Cup. We don't need the extra games. We're fighting relegation. They had Nigel Clough had just taken over Sheffield United at that point. They go to Villa Park, get a result, actually get a win, Sheffield United, and Villa fans are going crazy. I have a number of friends that are Villa supporters, and they were going nuts and saying, this shows the lack of ambition of the club. This is our one chance to ever win silverware. In this day and age, we're not going to win anything else other than the FA Cup. But then, of course, they didn't have the extra fixtures, and they stayed in the league last season. They struggled, but they once again avoided relegation. This season, they're in a very similar scenario, right? They're in about the same place on the table they were 12 months ago. They have Bournemouth, who's chasing promotion to the Premier League, having an outstanding season. Eddie Howe, one of the best young managers in English football. But I think this season, Lambert had to have a cup run. To get the fans off his back. The fans are still on his back for the Premier League performances and the style of play, which Villa is the least watchable side in the top flight, in my opinion. But this was such an important result. Bournemouth, a very good team, a team that's chasing promotion, as we said. Eddie Howe, a top manager, a top tactical manager also, which Lambert is not. So Lambert beating Howe and getting to the fifth round is a good win for Villa. Does this add complications because they're going to have extra games and they have a young team? Well, they don't have that young a team anymore, actually. They have a lot of players now that have been through relegation battles. I suppose so. So for Villa, you don't want any replays in the fifth round. You want to either win or lose at that stage and move on. And it's a complicated question. It's a loaded question, Nick, honestly. We won't know the results until we know whether Villa goes down this season.
Bournemouth part of FA Cup folklore after beating Manchester United back in the 80s when they were a third division side. Manchester United were pumping it up in the top flight, managed by Harry Redknapp. Good old Harry. The last fixture of the FA Cup. And here's a plug, and I want some money for this. The American Express Community Stadium. Incredibly, 30,278 short for Brighton and Hove Albion as they take on Arsenal. Brighton managed by ex-Tottenham star Chrissy Houghton. So we'll go to Nicky first. And they certainly made Arsenal call for the brown trousers. Although the scoreline was 3-1 in Arsenal's favour at one point in the game with 15 minutes left, Bulldog equalised. And it was all hands to the pump for the Gunners. As they panicked a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a great fixture for Brighton. I mean, you know, you would have not picked them to win that. I mean, Arsenal were in good form, even though they made a lot of changes to their team. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's the beauty of the FA Cup. You know, they come back and there's the excitement. You know, that the fact that it's all on one game. You know, you rarely get that in football. I mean, like, at a certain point, people are playing for draws. People are trying to, you know, just kind of go a point, you know, away from home is not too bad. Whereas the FA Cup, okay, a replay is good. But, you know, it's that excitement of one game meaning everything. And so, you know, I mean, Arsenal, you know, I think Arsenal over the whole game deserved to win. But Brighton, you know, gave it a go, and Chris Hughton's a great manager, and that's a great stadium, and they're a borderline Premier League team. You know, they could quite easily come into the Premier League and hang around for a while. So you know, it was a good result for Arsenal. I think Brighton, you know, shouldn't be underestimated.
Bertie, Arsenal, the FA Cup holders, and I think Arsene Wenger realizing the importance of keeping his hands on this trophy.
Yeah, no, he's one of those managers that is definitely taking it seriously, which I can totally understand. You know, Arsenal have the depth that they can play on multiple fronts in multiple competitions. So, yeah, it was a good game. I thought Walcott had a good return. He scored a great goal to score in the first few minutes. You know, Rosicky's goal was delicious. When he put them back in the
league. Delicious and nutritious, perhaps.
Delicious and nutritious. but, you know, the nice thing about Brighton is that they are such a family-based club. 30-odd thousand, you just mentioned. That's a wonderful stadium that they built there. You know, I remember their old ground.
The Goldstone Ground.
Yeah. And that was
a dump.
A real theatre. And a dump, but a real theatre. So they've really got something going there. And they've been unlucky the last couple of seasons. They've just been pipped from, you know, the qualifying spots to go up to the Premier League. So I think they're prime. They're ready to go back up again. I think Chris Houghton will do a good job for them. They are up in the Championship right now, so they are vying for those qualification spots. But nice to see that Ozil scored. He hasn't played for a while. So, but, you know, Arsenal have got too many weapons. But I did see that Brighton came back near the end there. They were really trying their hardest, but it's a big ask when you're playing against Arsenal. And Arsenal, yeah, I think they are in perfect position now going into the round of 16. So we'll see what happens.
Well, just to recap, Cambridge United, Manchester United will do it again. Blackburn Rovers through as our Crystal Palace. Bradford City, come on, you bantams. Derby County, Preston North End, Sheffield United do it again. West Brom through against Birmingham City. Reading on the road at Cardiff. Sunderland and Fulham, they will meet at Craven Cottage. Middlesbrough with one of the shocks of the round along with Leicester City. Liverpool go back to the Reebok. West Ham into the hat. Villa into the hat. Arsenal into the hat. Rochdale and Stoke City will do it tomorrow. Kartik Karachanya, whose name is written on the FA Cup? Dare you make a prediction after a wild fourth round?
I said Sparky last show, FA Cup show. I'm going to say it again. Stoke play tomorrow, by the way. I think this is the year for an outsider, and Sparky needs to win a trophy, right?
So a little case of the old Wigan Athletic. Tottenham Hotspur, yes, are out of the FA Cup. Nicky Hollander, the one competition that they invariably have a chance of winning. Whose name on the trophy now?
First of all, that's not the one, Charles. They're in the semi-final of the Carling Cup. I mean, they beat Chelsea 5-3, so we've got a much better chance of winning that one, I think. But I think that I go for Arsenal winning it again.
Yeah, obviously the luck of the draw has plenty to do with that. We could have more of the big boys facing each other, paving a way for some of the smaller fry to go to the hallowed turf that is Wembley Stadium. But Bertie, your life is on the line. You've got to pick a winner. I'll give you two, because I know how you like to sit on the fence.
All right, okay. Well, my heart says West Ham, but it is all going to come down to the draw on Monday. You could conceivably, which would be good, I think, for the game of football, have Liverpool play Arsenal, Man United play West Ham. Then that tears away two of those teams, and then it leaves the path for potentially a Championship or even a League One team to make it all the way to the semi-finals and maybe the final as well. So my heart says West Ham. I really feel if we can get the right path in the last few games, you never know.
I said last time out that it would be Manchester United. It really hurts me. It gives me, in fact, a nosebleed. But I think United will still find a way to win the FA Cup. You know what? If you love this show and you want to insult us, Twitter's the perfect place to do it. At World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPOD. Love to know your thoughts on who you think will advance in the FA Cup, who will win the FA Cup, the biggest surprises of the FA Cup. And don't forget, subscribe to us via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. That's all the time we've got for Phil Whelans, who dropped in with his take on West Ham United, Kartik Karachanya, Nicky Hollander, and Robin Burt. We will be back next weekend. Yes, the Premier League is back. For everybody concerned, we'll see you next week. Bye for now. Stop bloody coughing.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.